Welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast, the podcast that takes you on a journey into the world of leadership, offering a deep dive into the minds of accomplished leaders from various fields around the world. I'm your host, Amanda Jane, originally from the north of Ireland and now living in beautiful Cheshire, England. Together, we'll explore the strategies, experiences, and wisdom that have shaped these incredible leaders into the visionaries they are today through solo episodes and interviews. I'm a leadership and communications coach myself, and I'm passionate about good leadership and confident communication. Whether you're a seasoned executive, an aspiring leader in business, or someone simply fascinated by what makes people tick, each episode will provide valuable insights, practical tips, inspiring stories, and a few laughs along the way. So get ready for a dose of motivation on the Leadership Insights Podcast, brought to you by amandajane.co.uk. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Leadership Insights Podcast. And today I have with me Miriam Gilbert from the Impactfulness Lab. Hello, Miriam.
Hello, Amanda. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited too, and I get to have another wonderful conversation with a really interesting person. So have you had an opportunity to look at your favourite motivational song?
Yes, and as I've been actually pondering this all weekend, but I think there's two that I need to say rather than one. Oops.
Fine.
One of my go-to ones is actually Queen, and it's Don't Stop Me Now.
I love that. Yeah, that is a real dynamite song, isn't it?
That is an awesome one. And another one I really, really love is from the show The Greatest Showman. And it's actually not the title itself, which I love too. That's amazing. But there's one song where he sings From Now On, and he's talking about all the changes he makes. And it's so powerful and so emotional that he go like, yeah, whatever you're trying to achieve, like just start today. And it doesn't matter what happened before, you just start today again, which I think that is incredibly motivational.
I love that. I love the movie and I love that song because it starts off quite slow, and then it builds to this big crescendo, and I think you can get carried away on the on the message of the song. I love it, and the movie is just amazing. Thank you. And what about, have you got a motivational quote?
Yes, and that is, funny enough, it goes along the same kind of theme. It's actually, the quote is by Zig Ziglar, and it's they say that motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing, therefore we recommend it daily.
Oh. Which,
yeah, exactly.
So, like that.
Whenever I feel my motivation slacking a bit, it's like, okay, you just need to work on it. It's like a muscle, working on it, and can bring it back up.
I love that. You know, something's just occurred to me because I ask all my guests these questions, and no one has said, I don't have a motivational song, I don't have a motivational quote. Oh. Isn't that interesting? I think everybody has a song or a quote that they kind of fall back on that picks them back up again when they're feeling a bit low. But yeah, it's just occurred to me, and maybe I'll be interested if I have a guest on at some point and they say, no, I don't have a song or I don't have a quote. But it speaks volumes, doesn't it, really, that, you know, we all maybe have a song or a quote that that we rely on. And what about a book? And it doesn't have to be motivational. Do you read? Do you have a favorite book?
That was another one that was really tricky. I love reading a lot of the kind of popular science, popular psychology books. And one book that I found really, really interesting is a book called Factfulness. And it's the author, unfortunately, is no longer with us. And it's all about how, you know, how we can be, we hear a lot of news and we're bombarded with not great news. We're bombarded with things that are not going well in the world. Well, in this book, he's a data scientist, and he investigated, is the world, are humans really worse off than before? And it turns out, no, we're not. Actually, there is more girls and women can read than ever in history before. There are less death and childbirth than any time in history before. There are fewer people in dire poverty than ever before. And while he, you know, he doesn't make the case of like, oh, the work's done, quite the reverse. You know, he's very passionate about improving things. He was a doctor in a medical doctor in various very poor places in Africa, and, you know, saw horrible things that where he couldn't help because there was just no money. And yet he still maintained his optimism and saying, you know, it's no good to just look at the negative sides. We must also say, yes, we are making progress. Actually, there's less violence in the world, even if with, and this is the crazy bit, even with the wars and things going on, the world in comparison to, say, 400 years ago, is incredibly peaceful.
What an interesting point of view.
I know, which is, you know, and I think that's a good thing, because we need to have the positive as well, because otherwise it gets too easy to be discouraged and to be depressed and thinking, oh, there's nothing I can do to improve the world. But everybody can. And he goes through all sorts of themes like education, poverty, climate, and so on. And he looks at the different aspects. I highly, highly recommend that book to anybody.
I will definitely look that up. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about the sources of our news, and sort of going back 10, 20 years ago, you know, the mobile phone usage has increased, as we know, and the social media, and we're constantly being bombarded with shocking headlines that are drawing us in. You know, you mentioned the wars, and that's what makes us click on the story, isn't it? The shocking headlines. And you do become desensitized. Are we tuning into those stories because they're negative? And maybe in our minds are processed, are conditioned into thinking that, you know, woe is me, you know, oh, it's really, really bad. But when someone else comes along with that point of view, and you would describe him as a data scientist, where he's come along with this evidence and said, well, actually, that is a really interesting line. And yeah, I'm going to look that up because it fascinates me.
Yeah, it really is. Hans Rosling. And in fact, you can watch some amazing YouTube videos by him all around population growth and how we got it completely wrong when we think about how the world population is growing and so on. And his point is that we really need to understand what the data is truly telling us, rather than having these assumptions, because only when we really understand can we actually take actions that improve things further, because that's what he was about, you know, improving things further, very much so. But yeah, it's a very, very positive, very beautiful book.
Wow, thank you for that. And yeah, I'm exposing my geek side now.
Well,
so moving on to your leadership journey. So would you like to share your leadership journey and some key milestones that have shaped your career?
Yes. Well, how far back to go? I didn't consider myself as a leader for a really long time. I kind of fell into a corporate career by accident. I had come out of university studying history and politics, not being really sure what to do, didn't want to become a teacher, and like, oh well. And I came across these adverts for something called business advisory, and I thought, oh, that sounds quite good, I enjoy telling people what to do. I like to do that. I really didn't know, but actually it was training to become a chartered accountant. Anyway, I applied for these adverts, and I got invited. I got got made offers with a few firms, and turned out to be very large firms. And all of a sudden, I was in this graduate leadership program, which was kind of interesting. And I'm incredibly grateful for that. But because I come originally from Germany, so I was a bit older than most of my peers when I joined. And I do think those 2-3 years make quite a difference when you're out of uni. And, you know, you just have that bit more maturity. And I was in a position to look at how some of the team leads and managers were leading people. And I was like, that's not very respectful to the humans that they're dealing with. You know, they were at best doing leadership paint by numbers, you know, ticking the boxes, but not actually connecting. And some were just outright awful, which in hindsight was their fault. I don't know. They were just really young and had no experience and didn't know So I just looked at all of that and thought, I'm not so keen on that kind of leadership. But I stayed with, you know, it's a great education, amazing business education, and got to see the world, got to sit in boardrooms. That was, you know, very exciting. But again, I was always really interested in that human dynamics, you know, how people relate to each other, how somebody leads, how somebody follows or not follows, and or somebody who's called a leader, are they really a leader or are they just somebody who shouts louder? So I kind of feel I had an unofficial leadership education throughout my professional life, and I kind of climbed the career ladder. So I've always been ambitious. I've never liked people telling me what to do. So I always wanted to be the person who took charge of the direction of my career. So I thought, well, the best way to do that is to get promoted.
Interesting, the definition of leadership in there and what you observed in leadership, as in, is it someone that tells people what to do or someone that guides people what to do? And yeah, I think over, if you had that experience when you were straight out of uni and, like you say, you were a few years older, a little bit more mature, you had a different lens perhaps than the people that you were working with. And we emailed before this podcast, and you said your mission was to rehumanize the corporate realm, and I love that. I think it's very concise but precise. And yeah, you know, just because we turn up to work every day doesn't mean that we leave our human side at home. And there's a lot of, the job needs to get done, but it can be done in a more human way.
Yeah. And you know, there's two key things that happened that kind of shaped to get me where I am now. One was that not long after I'd left the consultancy and worked in industry, I was working in a very good team. And our leader, she was awesome. She was absolutely brilliant. And the team was lovely. And there was one lady who's a few years, maybe 10 years older than me. And her job was a good job. Maybe not the most exciting world, but it was, you know, it was a good job. Very well paid, good benefits, not restrictive. And yet she complained about it every single day. And she had been in that job for 20 years. And, well, no, she kind of been doing, must have been 15 years, but anyway. And she said, like, no, I'm just going to stay. Because I said, if you don't like it, why don't you leave? Get something else, do something. No, no, the benefits are too good. And I thought, what a waste of human potential. I felt so sorry for her, because I'm like, she's a smart, lovely lady, you know, great mom, fabulous person to go to the pub to. I mean, really an all-round, very nice human being. And yet she felt so stuck in a situation that she felt she had no way of escaping, even though it was a good, you know, it wasn't a bad situation at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still obviously squashing her human spirit and her human potential, and I thought that was really sad. And so that kind of laid the seeds of, okay, I'm going to do something very different. And then fast forward by a good decade, and I read another amazing book, which would have been my second one to pick for my favorite, and that is called, it's got a bit of a boring title, so please excuse that. It's called Reinventing Organizations, but it's nothing like the title imagines. In fact, it's a case study of 8 organizations, large ones, like with more than 500 employees, who have been in business for more than 10 years, who are doing corporate in such a different way that it's unbelievable. I mean, when you read these case studies of how people interact in these organizations, how they relate to each other, the successes they have, it's incredible. They are so human and so excited. I could go on to this for fundamentally, a lot of these organizations have no managers at all, not a single one. Often they don't have any performance management. They have tiny head office functions, and yet they are incredibly successful, grow like crazy, and are just so good at unleashing human potential. I've been lucky enough to actually meet the CEO of one of these companies. That company had, when I met him, it had 14,000 employees. Goodness. So we're not talking small. And they have, you know, you have to have a CEO because of legal requirements. But he says himself, I have no decision-making power. We have a process. And if I want a decision, I put it into that process and it will get treated the same as everybody else's. Sometimes it gets accepted. Sometimes it gets not accepted. That's just how it is.
Wow, how interesting. And I'm dying to read it now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you must read that. I mean, that has to be the second one you have to go on.
Yeah. It's evidence, I like to be evidence led. There it is in black and white, the theory behind the humanization of the workforce, and rather than the robotics and the hierarchy and clock in, clock out, because my belief is you don't suddenly change your persona at 9 a.m. and turn into a machine and then change at 5 o'clock. You know, you're a 24-hour human being, you've got things going on around you. And the flexibility and the compassion and the empathy, if that's the culture, I believe you get more out of that person, treating them as a whole person rather than, you know, trying to milk them for every ounce of work. And I've worked for some great organizations and I've worked for some not great organizations. And when you're in a position where you can take a step back and you can view that objectively, I just wonder how they, you know, the bad organizations, I wonder how they survived. Because you know, burnout rate is high, absenteeism, sickness, you know, all the usual things. But what you've described just sounds very, very idealistic, but obviously it works. If, you know, 14,000 employees, as you've just said. So, oh, wow, that is very, very interesting, going back to what you said about rehumanizing. So for you then, who would be your inspiration? Have you got any role models? And you've read a lot and discussed that. So have you got anyone in particular that you could maybe single out that has inspired you with that ideology?
Well, the CEO of that, it's a Dutch firm, the one that I met, it definitely inspires me. Otherwise, I have my favorite famous people, obviously, but somebody like Nelson Mandela is incredible because he, to me, amplified everything that a real leader is. He brought together sides that had been torn apart in unimaginable conflict, and he put his own feelings aside. He never gave up to start with. He brought this together. And then, as he was at the pinnacle of everything, he stepped away from it, which is like, wow, because he's the right, I've done as much as is right for me. We need to hand it on. And I think that is just absolutely, I find it very, very inspiring.
It is just takes your breath away when you see good leadership. I just love it as well when you can look at someone and just think, wow, that was pure integrity, demonstration of how leadership should be, with no ego, no alternative, no other motive. And a perfect example of how it should be done with integrity and with good intentions. Definitely, yeah, really inspirational. So in terms of leadership advice, what advice would you give to perhaps your younger self or someone just starting on a leadership adventure?
I was very lucky to get this advice relatively early on, and therefore I always like to pass it on. And that is, you don't need to prove to be that you're the smartest person in the room. But
I'm laughing because that was such good advice.
Well, I was really lucky. I had this great boss, and he's very, very Scottish. So he always said, like, well, just ask the daft laddie questions. And given that he was a CFO, people tended to answer his questions, but he would ask questions about stuff in quite simple ways. Or like, oh, so how does that hang together? Oh, how does, because he didn't feel the need to prove that he knew it all. And it was always incredible what came out of that. And it made it very clear when we were dealing with a lot of consultants at the time, we were very clear when they tried to pull the wool over our eyes, but it was also very motivational for everybody else. You know, people in the organization found it very motivational because they felt that they could actually talk and be heard, and that it wasn't all just corporate jargon positioning, but actual conversations. And so he became a very beloved leader because of that. So that is definitely the advice that I've taken on myself as much as I can and always like to pass on as well.
That's incredible, because I think we get programmed into perfectionism, to be in the smartest, the cleverest, that superlative of always being that, you know, the very best. And why do we do that to ourselves? why does society have that expectation? And to just turn up and just answer, like you said, just answer the question, just get on with it, to take away that expectation of having to be the best. And also being free to maybe ask a question. And I always say to people, there's no such thing as a stupid question, because if you've got a question, it's a valid question. But I always feel if someone's got a question and they're afraid to ask it, then that's the wrong environment. You know, if I've created that environment and someone's afraid to ask a question, then that is wrong. People should always be free to ask a question, regardless of, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. But to have that environment where there's no ego and it's just a learning environment. So he sounds pretty incredible.
He was very good. He was very good. Yes, I'm very glad, very privileged to have worked with him. Definitely.
Oh, amazing. And moving on to work-life harmony, how do you manage your work-life harmony? We're steering away from balance now.
Yes.
How do you feel about the word balance even?
Well, I'm Libra, so for me, everything is balance. So one of my favorite sayings is everything's a balance. That does not mean equal. That means it needs to be of the right proportions at the right times. And work-life harmony, I'm not scared of the word work-life integration, because a bit like you said earlier, we don't stop being the person who we are just because we turn up at work. And whether that's work, you're going into an office, or whether that's you turning on your laptop at home, you are still the same person. And coming to more inspiring books, but
I love it, it's great.
In a great book called Maverick, the leader who again transformed an organization beyond belief, he said that we've all become so used to say answering emails on a Sunday, yet who goes to the cinema on a Monday afternoon? And I think, yeah, this is it. You know, as long as you find the balance of how can whatever needs to be delivered be delivered, and, you know, coordinate with others, which, I mean, let's face it, in our private lives, we manage to do this all the time. Mm-hmm. So why should that not be possible in the work life? As long as you manage that, why not? You know, and why is it bad if I take 2 hours on a Sunday morning and do a bit of work, but then, you know, make sure I take time every single day when my son comes home from school to spend an hour with him, hanging out or chatting or whatever not, which... why not? I know that sounds as if I'm making it. This might sound as if I'm making it easy, but I have
no.
To say,
it exists. That flexible balance of workplace. It does exist, and yeah, and why not? Yeah. It should be perfectly acceptable.
To be fair, I do have to work on it. So you know, it's for a long time it got put into my daily to do list. Okay, block this time out to spend with yourself. Really, but at least then it got done. You know, it happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Allow work to creep in, so it is something I think that you just work on.
Yeah, but I do like that word integration, and the way I view it, you know, when you manage a team of people, I don't clock out at 5 o'clock, and if I'm working on a project and I have to ferment ideas, I can't switch my brain off to not plan and strategize, and I can be sat watching TV or going about my family life, but I know that I'm mulling ideas over in my head, and you know, and I don't turn my computer on in the morning and think, right, I'm going to think about this project now. You know, it doesn't work that way. And it's an evergreen process, isn't it? You know, you're always strategizing it and planning and things like that. So it's that integration and that blend. And I'm happy to do that because I'm a creative person and that's how I work. So it's a blend of both worlds and having that. And plus, I think if you're happy in your work, you are happy to do that. Which is everything, isn't it? If you enjoy what you do. But yeah, integration is a nice word there. Yeah. So have you had any specific challenges as a leader? Anything that you managed to overcome that was a hefty challenge?
I always seem to, in my corporate life, I always seem to have gone into organizations that were going through some big changes. And so the first organization I came into after leaving the consultancy, it was just had gone through a mega merger, and there were so many things that were not going well, and I was in charge of one particular area, and they were losing people left, right, and center, and the people who were there were not delivering. It was just awful. And so I've always been, I don't know, it came naturally to me. It's like, okay, well, you go to the people and find out what's going on. You know, just have a conversation. Yeah. Like, you know, just find out what's going on. If they're, and never, not that I ever think that anybody would be, but if they're really lazy bumps, then okay, we'll have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Most people actually are not.
Yeah.
Not in my experience. And I work with hundreds and hundreds of people. Like, most people actually want to do a good job.
Yeah.
And the moment I investigated a bit, I mean, we were located quite far apart. They were in near Bristol and we were up in Scotland. So I was the first leader from the organization that came to visit them in 2 years.
Ah, revealing.
There you go. Then that's the big shift. And when I turned up, honestly, I couldn't believe the office environment. Mm-hmm. It was so rubbish. Mm-hmm. It was so poor. Mm-hmm. And windows that couldn't be opened, dark. I mean, just really, it's if the office had been out by then, you know, I would have thought this was a spoof or something. It was just so bad. And because these people had been considered as you know, these days we still had data entry level position, they were just not giving any priority, they were not given any concern, they were not given any love, they were just dumb.
Dehumanized, maybe.
Yes, really treated badly. And I thought, this is crazy, because seriously, you don't need to invest hundreds of thousands here. You just need to do a few things right.
Yeah, bit of housekeeping.
Yeah, you know, just get them working equipment. That's a good start.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that was an interesting one. The thing, and it again confirmed my desire to change corporate culture around the world and rehumanize work, is that even when I came back with those assessments and explained, my immediate boss could straight away see, like, yeah, absolutely, we need to do something. But then to get through the hierarchy, and we were not talking a lot of spend. We were talking, you know, fairly modest spend, which would be definitely made up by just retaining people rather than having to constantly recruit and retrain. Mm-hmm. That made me think, wow, it was hard to push through that. And I think that built my muscle to, like, okay, I look after my team and I will just try to fight for them as much as I can, but also we do need to change corporate culture, because it should be a given that you treat people well.
If you think of the it's funny, the organizations accept the cost of training, recruitment, that's a given, but the minute you start talking about making the welfare conditions, which truly are minimal spend,
yes,
it's like hands up in shock horror. You want to repaint the room?
Yeah,
you want to provide tea and biscuits.
Yes.
But
oh
really,
£200 on paint?
Exactly. Like, you know, a happy workforce, you know, just that little thing to bring a little bit of joy into someone's working day can genuinely make all the difference. And again, it's reintroducing that humanizing element. And you know, if people are working in a happy environment and it's light and bright and breezy, and what, it's just such a simple thing, but interesting that the recruitment costs are an acceptable cost, but these other things are, you know, not acceptable. Anyway, moving on to my final question for you, Maria. I could talk about that all night.
Oh, we could talk about this forever. Yes, absolutely.
my final question for you. What legacy do you hope to leave as a leader, and how do you measure the impact of your leadership? And I think you're going to have a massive impact.
Well, I really hope so. I mean, it is my mission to generally change corporate culture around the world. And I know that sounds like a grand ambition, but actually I think it's totally doable.
Absolutely.
Because all we need to do is help leaders inside organizations see that there are actual alternatives to the strict command and control, now we will not buy tea and biscuits type of environment. That there are actual companies that do this really, really well already, that you can trust your employees. By the way, you spend a lot of time, money, and energy on hiring these employees, so why would you not trust them? So we need to do that. And that's why I do this work as a consultant myself, going into organizations. And I had not long ago a beautiful letter from one of my clients where they sent me a nice letter, but also a little pack of wildflower seeds saying, the team's still flourishing.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
And it's so sweet, so thoughtful. And that's how I measure, you know. But also, I've started to work with coaches, consultants, stress manager experts, well-being experts, speakers, trainers, all kind of people who share my mission, and helping them to get into corporates. Because I think if we create a tidal wave of passionate experts going into organizations to actually change it, then we can, you know, we change it one team, one part of an organization at a time, and it has that ripple effect that flows through organizations who connect. So my mission is that in 10 years' time, when people say the word corporate culture, it won't have this ultra negative connotation anymore. It won't be seen as this toxic, horrible thing that you must avoid and escape, but that there'll be more companies that are actually good places where human potential can flourish, and that doing good things and making good decisions for the world as well. Because that's the last part of the puzzle, that when you have people who work in environments where they're happy, and the people are happier in their work, they tend to make more ethically sound decisions. So not just for themselves or even just for the company, but literally for society around them. So they think twice about hiring, you know, like getting a supply chain that uses child labor, for example, or delaying investment in a filter that stops pollutants being released in rivers. When people are happy in the work, they make the right ethical decisions around these kind of and many, many more topics. And that means we have to get them healthy so they make those good decisions, and that way we change the world. Thank you for coming to my TED talk.
No, and I'm nodding as you speak, because I know it's absolutely doable. And when you have an employee that's invested in the company because they themselves have been invested in, it's not just the employee, the family's invested in the company. So, and it's inevitable, they're going to want to make the right decisions. They're going to give their whole selves to the betterment of that company. And when you've created that model, the evidence that produces, the ripple effect is there, and it sells itself. You know, it's not a hard sell that you're going to have to go to the next corporation to say, oh, you know, look at the results, because the results will inevitably speak for themselves. And that's always been my view as an employee. It's not just that person, it's that family that's invested in that organization. And, you know, it's so refreshing to have had this conversation with you, and to know that there's people like you out there that are out doing this incredible work. And I think organizations as a whole probably want to have this model. They just don't know how to do it. And not everybody has that human skill within them to start doing it. And if you imagine, you know, a stuffy corporation, and maybe you've got a, you know, a CEO that wants to do it but doesn't know how, for that person to change their their personality, it's you know yourself, change is difficult to implement. But I think people do want to embrace that change, and they just don't know how. And it's people like you that are going to teach organizations how to do that. But yes, changes come in. Change for the better. Change for the better for all employees. Thank you so much, Miriam. So where can we find out more about you online?
Well, if you are a coach, speaker, trainer, expert who wants to work with corporate clients, then do check me out at impactfulnesslab.com. And if you are a corporate leader who wants to look at how you can improve the performance of your teams while rehumanizing the workplace, then get in touch at coincidencity.co.uk. Do you want me to spell that? Or
I will put the links in the show notes. Perfect. I will put all the links and all the email addresses. Well, that is absolutely fantastic. It's been a joy and a pleasure, Miriam, talking to you. And again, with all my guests, I could talk forever. It's been absolutely fascinating. And you've made me think about things I haven't considered, which is where my geek zone is. So thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for giving me the opportunity to talk about some of my passion projects. It's been such a pleasure, and you've been such a gracious host. So thank you very, very much for this opportunity.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for listening to the Leadership Insights podcast today, and special thanks to my lovely guest, Miriam Gilbert. Join me on the next episode for more inspirational leadership stories and insights. You can follow me on Instagram at Coach Amanda Jane, or visit my website, amandajane.co.uk. Bye for now.